This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? A Jason Rand exclusive.
So after the media showed up, Seattle City Councilwoman Lisa Herbold told a couple that they could park their RV in her driveway to avoid being towed. This was an act of compassion from Lisa Herbold. But before she presented herself as compassionate, before this story became the media spectacle that it became, Councilmember Herbold privately asked Seattle Police Chief Carmen Best for options on how to handle that RV. This, according to sources speaking exclusively to me. This is a move that shows the privilege of dealing with the impacts of homelessness when you happen to be a council member. Now, this is a story that we've been covering for about 3 weeks now, 2.5 weeks or so. We had on this show community activist Ari Hoffman, business owner, good dude, came on and said, look, I am so sick and tired of all the derelict RVs being left outside of my business, outside of my place of worship, that if it doesn't get handled by the city, I'm going to put these RVs in front of my council members' homes. Now, Lisa Herbold is not a representative of Hoffman in his home or his business. But he said that, and the very next day, what ended up happening was in front of Lisa Herbold's home was a derelict RV. And everyone assumed that it was someone who was either inspired by Hoffman or Hoffman himself. Now, it was Yom Kippur. Hoffman is an Orthodox Jew, so it was clearly not him, and I kind of realized that at the time. But people were wondering, and everyone fell for it. Because it turns out that was a huge coincidence. The RV was owned by a couple struggling to make ends meet. They intended to park their RV just temporarily in that position. In fact, they came forward the next day. And when they came forward, we heard from Lisa Herbold. She said she was concerned for their well-being. She offered her driveway as a spot to leave the RV. But the night before, she contacted Chief Carmen Best to help handle it. And she did this all before it would become a media story bringing reporters to her home. Generally, city leaders are extended the courtesy of contacting Chief Carmen Best or any other high-ranking Seattle police officer. Why? Because given they are involved in unique security concerns as public officials, they need to have easy access to someone like Chief Carmen Best to make sure they're getting through the bureaucracy and getting the protection they deserve. That makes total sense to me. This call wasn't due to some kind of security threat. This had nothing to do with security threats. Something everyday citizens deal with on a regular basis, which is having an RV that's a derelict RV that's left in front of their home or their business, parked next to a park, causing all sorts of problems. When we have to deal with it, the lowly Seattleite, what are our options? What are our options? Call the cops and nothing gets done because this council under the leadership of Lisa Herbold makes sure that police can't do their jobs and ticket or tow. But when you're a council member, oh, you get to contact the chief of police. Now, if she was hoping to get any sort of special consideration from Chief Carmen Best, she was sorely mistaken. Because Chief Best just was all like, yeah, call the non-emergency number. That's what you're supposed to do. She didn't get any special treatment. And when you call the chief with a complaint, there is an implication that you have some kind of expectation. Now, to be fair to Lisa Herbold, according to my sources, she was not asking for any special treatment, except she called directly or texted directly Chief Carmen Best. That seems like you're asking for something, and she didn't get it. Kudos, by the way, to Chief Carmen Best for not bending over backwards to help someone like Lisa Herbold, who is not a friend to cops.
I love it. Use the non-emergency line. Do not use this.
I love
for
it.
Non-emergency.
She's all like, do you know what time it is? I don't want to have to deal with it. I'm assuming she did not actually say that. But I did reach out to Lisa Herbold's office, and it's funny because they gave me a statement on Friday night. This was at a point where I knew that she had contacted the police. I just didn't have all the details. She acknowledges, she admits, yeah, I contacted SPD. The statement she gave me, I asked whether SPD could determine whether the trailer had been reported as stolen property, because if it had been stolen, I wanted to make sure we could return the property to its rightful owner. Oh, of course you did. By the way, anytime someone complains about derelict RVs in their neighborhoods, they're called NIMBYs. They're saying, why don't you chill out? These are just people like you and me. These are human beings who are on tough times right now. She sees a derelict RV. She immediately assumes that it's stolen. That's kind of weird. She doesn't practice what she preaches. And by weird, I mean I totally understand that she's a hypocrite and this is how she acts. This is a council member who's up for re-election. This is a council member who has gone out of her way to slow the cleanups of RVs and of encampments. She took a vote to cut staff members to Seattle's navigation team, which is tasked with going and connecting people living out on the streets with resources while simultaneously cleaning up these dangerous encampments. She has gone after that team. And I suppose when you go out of your way to make sure you can make calls to the chief of police or maybe to the mayor's office or whomever, maybe implying a favor needs to be done so that you don't have to deal with homelessness the way everybody else does. Maybe I guess that empowers you to go after the homeless cleanups because you have this expectation, Lisa Herbold, that you're not going to have to deal with it just like everybody else. But you know what? Yeah, you do. I love this story. Because this is what privilege looks like. The left will go out of their way to talk about privilege, privilege, privilege. This is privilege. This is NIMBYism. This is a hypocrite who says, oh, she cares so deeply about the homeless while making these phone calls, presumably to get these RVs cleared as soon as humanly possible. Because you know what would happen if that RV was cleared? She would not have had to deal the next day with all of the news around them, yeah? That would benefit her. Because every single time that you remind people in this city as to how bad homelessness has gotten, every single time you remind the city about where we are at, it looks bad on her and her reelection campaign, and she wanted to avoid that. That's my sense. This is absolutely ridiculous. I just love that she went out of her way to say, hey, I don't think we should make fun of the homeless people with this kind of stunt. You didn't even originally think it was a stunt. Although she did say to the Seattle Times she thought Ari Hoffman, again, Orthodox Jew, did this on Yom Kippur. That's what she told the Seattle Times. Didn't admit in her statement to me that her contact with the SPD was the contact with Chief Carmen Best. Do you have Carmen Best's number when there's something going on?
No, I wish. Obviously, it wouldn't work, but it'd be nice.
I don't have that. Well, I'm friends with her on Facebook, and I think she follows me on Twitter. So in theory, I could do it, so I shouldn't say anything. But I wouldn't. I mean, I probably would. But I'm also honest about that. Lisa Herbold is not. If this doesn't piss you off, then I don't know what will when we're talking about the kind of privilege that these council members live with. They don't care as much about homelessness because they don't have to deal with it. They are literally one phone call or text away from at least the perception that someone's going to be able to do something for her. Now, why is this important? She's up for re-election. She's going up against Phil Tavel. This is an incredibly important race in West Seattle. And when we say bad policies of Seattle spread well past Seattle, it means you need to be more activated in this. You need to make sure that if you know anyone who lives in West Seattle, you're telling them to back and vote for Phil Tavel. They only have a little bit more than a week to get that ballot in. The sooner they get it in, the better. Because every single day that they don't, they could either become susceptible to the lies that big union interests are putting out there to defeat candidates who are going up against people like Lisa Herbold or Shama Sawant or Deborah Juarez. Every single day that they don't is one extra day that they might forget to put in that ballot. So if you know anyone in West Seattle, make sure they're backing Phil Tavel. If you don't, all you have to do is help me shine a spotlight on this issue by posting my blog on your Facebook feed, on your Twitter feed, because I guarantee you, once you do that, someone's going to like it. And when they like it on their Facebook page, it pops up, they get a little notice. Maybe they share it. Maybe the person who likes it and shares it because of you knows someone in West Seattle, and you just helped impact this election. It's really that simple. So I want you to do something very easy. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770, and I'm going to send you a link to this blog, not just so you could read, because I can appreciate you reading it, but I just told you it. I need you to post it everywhere. This story has been number one on MyNorthwest.com and KTTH.com all day for a reason. This is outrageous, and you need to help me shine a spotlight. Text the keyword RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. There's no more complaining about what Seattle is becoming and what it's doing to this region if you're not willing to step up and help out in the simplest of ways. I want more text messages right now. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770 or go online directly to KTTH.com. Keep those text messages coming. I want you to break down the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline. Although because NumBetter Tax Resolution is behind it, it's a rather bulky program. It's not going to break down. I mean, this is a good piece of equipment.
There's none better than it.
Hey, I like what you did there. Because NumBetter Tax Resolution, you did NumBetter. Get it? I mean, you did it, so of course you get it.
Oh, yeah, I'm all over that.
1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So it was a curious game for the Seahawks yesterday as they took on the Atlanta Falcons on the road. The expectation, it was going to be a cakewalk for the Seahawks. Not so much. Here's producer Peyton's two-minute drill.
Start your watches and off we go because it's time for the two-minute drill.
Here comes the blitz. Russell has time. Throws over the top. One-handed catch! Are you kidding me, Tyler Lockett?
Seahawks fans are pretty used to hearing that by now. Russell Wilson finding Tyler Lockett. Miracle pass, miracle catch. How does it happen? Unfortunately, they got a little used to hearing this, too.
The throw again, and again a first down reception by Julio.
The Seahawks still find themselves struggling to put together games. This was really a tale of two halves, as much as you could define it. Seahawks got a lead 24-0 by halftime. Second half, complete dud. Matt Schaub looked like a Pro Bowl-level quarterback, and Julio Jones finished the game with 153 yards. This is something that the Seahawks defense really needed to lock down on. Going into the second half, they had 24-point cushion. It almost wasn't enough. Final score, 27-20 in favor of the Seahawks. A much-needed win to keep the Seahawks perfect on the road. They have yet to lose, which is something that teams dream of by the midway point of the season.
Our guys have really captured the mentality to get ready to play on the road. And I'm so fired up about that because that's so valuable for us. It's somewhat historic, you know, all the years it's taken to get four wins on the road in a row. But more of that, they're all, you know, three of the four were those early games and way out there across the country, the whole thing, you know, and our guys just responded really well.
And next week, who knows what version of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Seattle will see. They just put up 55 points against the LA Rams just a few weeks ago. When you have wide receivers like Chris Godwin, like Mike Evans, anything is possible, especially with a crafty head coach like Bruce Arians. That being said, Seattle and its secondary need to get things figured out before this Sunday. My time is up here. That's going to be it for me. For the Jason Rantz Show, I'm producer Peyton.
There you go, the two-minute drill with producer Peyton. It was an interesting matchup, though I do acknowledge I didn't actually watch the fourth quarter. Because I had to go.
Save your eyeballs from it. It was disgusting.
It was tense.
I hated it.
Because I would have assumed that they were going to lose. And I would have said, see, there you go. Tale of two halves, but in reverse. They usually do poorly in the first half. They do well in the second half. Now they're switching it up. Bob Stelton's going to stop by for a deeper dive in the next hour to talk about that. But until then, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
Freshman Representative Katie Hill of California, she has announced she's going to resign by the end of the week after she got called out for inappropriate sexual relationships with staffers in her office and on the campaign trail. Here's some constituents talking to CBS News.
You can't get over some kind of embarrassment like this.
I guess at this point you really don't have a choice once your reputation's tarnished.
Well, you say that to a whole many people who are right now in Congress whose reputations have been tarnished. Now, the interesting thing in all of this, she's being defended by both sides of the aisle on one particular aspect of all of this. You had Red State posting some nude photos that she was involved in with one of her staffers. So they're claiming that this is revenge porn. Not entirely sure I agree with that particular take, but it is certainly leaning in that direction. And for her part, she's saying, hey, I am going to step down, but I am blaming my ex-husband who's abusive, and I'm blaming all the conservatives out there for posting the images that they posted.
Hi, I'm Katie Hill, and last night I announced the most difficult decision of my life, that I would be resigning from Congress. I made this decision so that my supporters, my family, my staff, and our community will no longer be subjected to the pain inflicted by my abusive husband and the brutality of hateful political operatives. This coordinated campaign carried out by the right-wing media and Republican opponents, enabling and perpetuating my husband's abuse by providing him a platform, is disgusting and unforgivable.
I'm sorry, but there are some key details in this that she's leaving out that I think is pretty important, because even Nancy Pelosi is coming out and kind of calling out Katie Hill. She was involved in sleeping with subordinates. That's the allegation. Subordinates on her campaign and subordinates in her office. You're not supposed to do that. She is being investigated by the House Ethics Committee over this. The House Ethics Committee. Remember, you've got Democrats in charge. They could have very easily decided they weren't going to get involved in this, push this aside. But they said, no, this is kind of bad stuff. That's separate from the nude photos, which I do not think should have been published. I don't care. She apparently was in... Have you ever heard of a throuple?
No.
A throuple? So it's a couple plus a third. So she was involved with her husband, and then a third person is basically like an open relationship?
Yeah.
Okay. I've never heard of the term throuple or throuple, but apparently that's a name. She was toppled by the throuple. That almost rhymes.
Wow.
I'm just saying, I don't care about any of that. I don't want to know. I don't want to see her nude photos. I think it's disgusting that they were posted, even if it was posted by Red State in a honest way, meaning they thought that there was some news value to this. I find that a little bit hard to believe. They could have said they have the photos, but they're choosing not to release them. Pushing that aside, the other stuff is totally legitimate to talk about. And I don't care if it comes to us through an ex who is abusive. Go after the abusive husband. That's disgusting. But it doesn't dismiss the fact that Katie Hill was apparently involved in a sexual relationship with people who work for her. When you are a congressperson, or frankly, when you're in a position of power, regardless of whether or not it's in Congress or in a private sector job, it is inappropriate. That's why Nancy Pelosi has called her out. She says, quote, she has acknowledged errors in judgment that made her continued service as a member untenable. We must ensure a climate of integrity and dignity in the Congress and in all workplaces. So do you think Nancy Pelosi is calling her out as part of this massive right-wing conspiracy? No.
And they will be held accountable.
Uh-huh.
But I will not allow myself to be a distraction from the constitutional crisis we're faced with and the critical work of my colleagues. And so I have to take my personal fight outside the halls of Congress. Too many Americans are counting on Washington to fulfill our promises of quality health care, housing we can afford, and a government that works for the people.
You're not a hero. You're someone who's getting called out because you did something inappropriate. Now, Politico's reporting, Hill was under investigation by the House Ethics Committee for allegations of an improper sexual relationship with a male congressional staffer, a claim she denied. Hill admitted to and apologized for a quote-unquote inappropriate relationship with a female campaign staffer earlier this week. If that's how you're going to act, you have to assume you're going to get called out on it. Now, part of the reason why so much attention is being focused on Katie Hill is because she was kind of part of that group of freshmen, progressive / socialist Democrats. In this case, she was able to unseat a Republican, so this was a pickup for them. Now they're going into a special election. Here's politics professor Michael Genovese from Loyola Marymount University.
What we're going to see is that this is going to be a special election, almost certainly, with probably a December filing deadline. The interesting thing is this is going to be a local election with national implications.
There will be national implications to this, and you can assure yourselves that the Republican Party is going to put a whole bunch of money into this district, because this is a district that should probably not have gone to a Democrat. It has nothing to do with the changing demographics. It had to do with the anti-Trump fervor, but at some point, you kind of become fatigued by your own anti-Trump fervor. And so we'll see how this ends up going. This is when we're talking about an election in December. That's all going to be about the ground game. And money buys ground game. Getting people into the polls to actually vote, put in that ballot. It's all about the ground game, and that means it's all about the money. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send me a text message on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show live in the Online Trading Academy studio. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I just sent out a burn. Is that what the kids still say?
Wow, you did that?
Is that what they say?
Yeah, sometimes.
They don't do that.
I mean, we roast people.
Well, I got a shout out from someone. But by shout out, they were about to insult me, from a band called the Sleep Sensors, whom I've never heard of. He tweeted, "Here's a shout out to Jason, our very own budget Ben Shapiro." So I responded, I retweeted it because I've got more followers than this loser does. I said, "Shout out to the bassist for Sleep Sensors, a band no one has ever heard of, trafficking in anti-Semitism to appeal to bigots in his echo chamber. Speaking of budget, I'm so grateful to own so much space in this loser's head. Living rent-free is such a spacious studio is," and then I did a little fire emoji.
Sick burn.
Burn!
Got him.
Okay. Sometimes that's fun. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRants. Mayor Jenny Durkin and some others were somewhat caught off guard by a tweet made by Seattle PD Chief Carmen Best. It was a great tweet. I don't know if they've been sort of positioning this as they were caught off guard. I think only in the sense that they did not know that she had tweeted this. Not that there was anything controversial in this tweet, to be fair to Carmen Best and Assistant Chief Deanna Nolette, who we're going to talk about in a second. But here's the tweet. "A business owner reported a property crime and Seattle PD arrested the suspect. Within hours, the suspect was released from jail and returned to commit a new crime. The same officer rearrested the suspect. This not only hurts our community, but officer morale as well. Kudos, very much so, to Carmen Best for calling this out." I do wish that she would name some names in throwing this shade around, because unless you're going to go after these people who are responsible for this nonsense, I'm not sure anything is going to change. I will say, I heard from cop friends over the weekend, a dude from Renton was arrested and released three times by the SPD since Friday. Arrested, released, arrested, released, arrested, released. That's going to get cops sick and tired of doing their job, because they realize it's for naught when it comes to the justice system here. Now, Como News read Chief Best's tweet to Assistant Chief Deanna Nolette.
"Wow, okay. I think there needs to be accountability, and what that looks like in these cases, if it's incarceration, if it's referral to social services, I just think that there needs to be accountability for people's behavior."
The tweet should not shock anybody. If you've noticed over the course of the last couple, 3 months, she's been stepping up. Because she knows what I've been reporting for over a year is 100% true. There is a massive morale problem because cops are doing work that's being ignored by the city attorney, the city council, and in some cases, judges and prosecutors. And to that point, Assistant Police Chief Nolette says, "Hey, we can't control what the courts are doing here.
We are making thousands of contacts. We are making thousands of arrests on everything from property crime to violent crime. We're one part of a system that exists to hold people accountable. And we can't control what happens downstream from what we're doing."
They can't. Now, Mayor Durkin finds herself in an interesting position, and frankly, it's a little bit of a mixed bag in how I want to talk about this, because I do actually think she's doing some work. She's doing some work, but she's doing it quietly. She's doing it quietly as if she's ashamed of it. She's cleaning up. She's empowering the navigation team to clean up some of the dangerous encampments on the streets, but they're doing it in silence almost. They're doing it on the DL almost like she's tiptoeing around it because she's ashamed. She's not ashamed. She just doesn't want to deal with the activist class of professional folks who shame her, who bully her, who yell at her. Because they don't like that plan, because it's not their plan. It's not compassionate to clean up these encampments and get people to go inside. That apparently is not compassionate. Compassionate to the professional activist class is keeping people out on the streets, living in filth, surrounded by human waste, cold, wet, dying. That's somehow Seattle compassion. But I don't really have sympathy for Mayor Durkin in all of this. I don't. I don't have sympathy for anyone who tries to placate crazy people. Because she does this in quiet, you're enabling the behavior that's preventing you from proudly proclaiming that we are changing directions in how we deal with homelessness in Seattle. And she makes a valid point here.
"People who have significant behavioral health issues often can't stand trial, so we have to let them go. but then they recommit offenses, but we can't get the help we need. And we've got to change that.
Sometimes, but the fact of the matter is, we could be doing a better job from a judicial perspective, making sure these people get the mental health care that we're ordering them to seek. And if they don't, you throw them in jail. Sorry, I understand when you're dealing with someone with mental illness, it's not going to be easy and they're likely to recommit. But let me tell you, if you do not put this person in jail and they have shown an unwillingness to get the help that they desperately need, you are releasing them to recommit crimes against innocent people. What about them? What about the innocent bystander who's just going about their day? What about that person who gets sucker punched by some random dude who's dealing with a mental illness? What about the rights and the safety of the passerby, of the toddler who had coffee thrown in his face? What about that kid's rights? What we need to do when we're talking about things like this is call out the people. We have to call them out. We have to demand action from the council. But the truth of the matter is, this council is not going to change anything. Pete Holmes, the Seattle City Attorney, he's never going to change. Jenny Durkin, Chief Best, all of them, they could scream at the top of their lungs. Nothing's going to change unless you kick these people out of office. Lisa Herbold, Councilmember West Seattle, never, ever, ever, ever going to change. Shama Sawant is an ideologue, a dangerous one. She's never going to change. Deborah Juarez, never going to change. Pete Holmes, never going to change. And so what happens when they're never going to change? We change them. We have the power. We have the power right now. There's an election going on. How many of you have called and emailed and texted your friends who live in Seattle? How many of you have stepped up and said, you know what, I'm going to donate to a campaign. I'm going to help Phil Tavel out. I'm going to help out a candidate that I know is going to pursue policies that make sense for us. How many of you have done that? How many of you have knocked on doors? I know not everyone can knock on doors, but you know what? Every single person listening to my voice right now can probably afford to give $5 to a campaign, or $10 or $20 or more. Some of you can do that plus knock on doors. Some of you can very simply post stuff on your Facebook wall to make sure that the people who you know live in Seattle are at least getting the news, because they're not going to get it from most outlets here, unless they listen to the show, obviously. I mean, but that was implied, yes.
Everyone listens to the show, Jason.
I'm just throwing that out there.
You have the ears of everyone in Washington State right now.
Darn tootin'. See what I did there?
Yeah.
I was going to lean into the nastiness, but then I cleaned it up at the last minute.
Yeah, and you said tootin'. Good job.
I know. Thank you. I don't need your approval.
No. That's what I'm here for. Words of affirmation.
I'm just saying people can actually step up, because you will hear, and kudos to the people who have stopped sending me these text messages. I used to get them literally all the time. I can't stand Seattle. I used to live there. I moved to Enumclaw. Things are so much better. I moved to Poulsbo. I moved to Port Orchard. I now live in Maple Valley. Oh, I'm so glad I left the mess that is Seattle. Well, all of a sudden, I stopped getting those text messages. All of a sudden, I'm hearing from folks in Edmonds saying, oh my, wow, I thought I got to escape all the nonsense that's following me here. Did you see what they're doing with the gun storage bill that's written exactly after the one in Seattle? They're getting me. Or the plastic bag bans and straw bans, either being passed or discussed in Kirkland, in Tacoma, in Olympia. Look in Tacoma, where they're about to pass an ammo and gun tax that is exactly the same as the one in Seattle. Bad policies of Seattle spread. Politicians who are ideologues, driven by their activism, they get inspired by the stuff that happens here. So no longer can you say, I live in Covington. I don't have to deal with this nonsense. No, 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 no. Yes, you do. And it's on all of us. Every single person who is listening to my voice right now in Washington State, it's on all of us to step up and take back control of this region. It starts in Seattle. So ask yourself what it is you're doing to help change the reality here. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hall. And when we come back, perfect example of bad policies of Seattle spreading. It's now going to hit Tacoma. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in as we are live in the Online Trading Academy studio on this Monday afternoon. Tomorrow night, despite fierce opposition, it looks like the city of Tacoma, via the Tacoma City Council, will vote to tax ammunition 2 cents per round of 22 caliber or below, and 5 cents for other ammunition. Worse, it adds a $25 per gun fee, a tax, to the gun shop owners. And it's freaking a whole bunch of people out, like Mary Davies of Mary's Pistols in Tacoma. She says that she is certain that they're going to close down their shop if this tax goes through.
I've had it up to here with this commie liberal state. I'm certain I will close if it goes through. It's the principle of the idea that people have to pay for what they believe is their right. You would not pay a tax to vote. You would not pay a tax to have free speech.
Good for her talking with Como TV. I call this the self-defense tax. We have a self-defense tax in Seattle as well, and it looks like you're going to get it in Tacoma. The proposal was pitched by Tacoma Councilmember Ryan Mello. He's pushing it as a way to fund gun violence prevention programs in the city. Only they're just taxing law-abiding citizens for things they're not responsible for. Mary is not responsible for the violence that they have there. The single mom who lives in Tacoma, or the single dad who lives in Tacoma, or the family that lives in Tacoma and happen to own a gun, they're not responsible for the gun violence. You've got a gang violence problem in Tacoma. You know what gang members aren't doing? They won't be paying a tax on ammunition. They're not purchasing their weapons at Mary's store. They're buying it on the black market. They're stealing them. That's what they do. And this isn't going to fix anything. And as a consequence, you're getting gun shops saying, yeah, we're going to have to close down. They're going to have to close down. And it's okay, because people like Ryan Mello or Tacoma Mayor Victoria Woodards, they don't really care about the livelihoods of these gun shop owners. They want to get rid of guns. Guns are bad. Guns do bad things. They won't call out the gang members in any meaningful way. They'll sort of tiptoe around it. Sometimes they'll acknowledge there's a gang violence problem, then other times they won't. In fact, Mayor Woodard said that there's, quote, an urgent and critical need to fund programs that educate the public about responsible gun ownership, gun safety, and gun violence prevention. You guys have 22 homicides in the city of Tacoma. Do you think that is because of gun irresponsibility from your average owner? You have a gun shooting drive-by problem. Do you think it's the responsible gun owner in Tacoma who's doing that? Gun safety? How about you give some money to cops and allow them to go after the gang members in a more meaningful way? This is a perfect example of when we say bad policies of Seattle spread. This is the exact replica of a Seattle policy. And all that policy did was what it truly was intended for? Yeah, raise some money, less than $100,000, chump change, to a city the size of Seattle. What it ended up doing was what it was designed to do, which is push out gun owners. That was the goal. I think there's like one place where you can buy rifles for hunting in the city of Seattle. The other gun shops, they left. They left. Bad policy spread. And this is going to be another one of them. Meanwhile, Beto O'Rourke, he's trying to have it both ways, because now he's pretending he's not talking about gun confiscation. Here he is with MSNBC's Joe Scarborough.
Tell us about your plan on the confiscation of guns, which obviously many believe is unconstitutional. Also very concerned that it plays right in the hands of Republican candidates.
To be clear, I'm not talking about confiscating anybody's guns.
He's not talking about confiscating anybody's guns. Doesn't that sound like a lie? Didn't he say many, many, many times he is, in fact, confiscating guns?
Are you, in fact, in favor of gun confiscation?
Yes, when it comes to AR-15s and AK-47s.
Wait, hold on, hold on.
To be clear, I'm not talking about confiscating anybody's guns.
Okay.
Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15, your AK-47. We're not going to allow it to be used against our fellow Americans anymore.
Okay, so you are going to confiscate guns. Why don't you just be honest? I don't understand. He's trying to have it both ways. And he's trying to have it both ways with this sort of self-righteousness. Hell yes, I'm going to take away guns. Okay, if you hold that position on a debate stage, why not then extend that exact type of language to when MSNBC's Joe Scarborough is asking you? You've not changed your mind. If anything, you're holding back when you say hell yes to gun confiscation. The truth of the matter is he's trying to go after all guns. That's what so many Democrats want to do. Guns bad. People who own guns, you guys are all cowards. That's what they believe. And what does it happen to do to you, the gun owner? Whether we're talking about it on a national stage, if Beto was ever in a position to confiscate guns, or if we're talking about it on a more local stage, like in Seattle, like in Edmonds, like in Tacoma, what does it mean? It means less of you will have guns for self-defense, and more of the bad guys will have guns. Bad guys don't get taxed on ammo. They're not going to the stores to buy them. Bad guys don't turn in their AR-15s because Beto O'Rourke said that they needed to. That's literally part of what makes them bad guys. They do what it is they want to do. And as a result, our lives are more on the line. For the people who have guns because they're doing so to protect themselves, you guys are going to live a more dangerous life as a result of these types of policies. And you never, ever, ever hear any understanding coming from people like Beto O'Rourke or from Councilmember Ryan Mello. Never get any understanding of what it might feel like to a gun owner. They just say, oh, well, we have a better use for the money. We don't like guns anyway. But they would never take these positions against any other rights. They would never do that. They want to make it easier for you to vote. Cool. They want to make it easier for you to have an abortion. Okay. But they want to make it harder for you to have access to your Second Amendment rights. That's problematic, to borrow their phrase. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join me on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. Go there. You can see photos and videos of us and participate in the conversations. Two more hours coming up right here on AM 770 KTTH.